members. It's 10 o'clock, so good morning and welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Police on our scheduled meeting for this week. Welcome to all the members. We also welcome, of course, the South African Police Service under Lieutenant General Magwena and Lieutenant General Magwena. We welcome to them, the team, who will give an opportunity to introduce themselves, also the island. Acting Executive Director. We also have Civil Society and Trade Unions. Also welcome to Popku Sapu, also for being with us today, and other representatives from Civil Society. We welcome you to this meeting. Honourable members, just maybe to recap from last week, we were supposed to have in this first slot Mr. David Bruce to talk on his research and recommendations in terms of the Ricana approach. He's running a bit late, so we will deal with him after this interaction. So he's still on the program, and then we will deal with that. Maybe just indicate the purpose really of today's meeting is the outcome of last year's engagements we had with SAPS on training. Now, the vision of the NDP is for safety and security, as confirmed in Chapter 12, is for people living in South Africa feel safe at home, at school, at work, and they enjoy a community life free of fear. The police service is well-resourced and professional, staffed by highly skilled officers who value their work, serve the community, safeguard lives and property without discrimination, protect the peace against violence, and respect the rights to equality and justice. Throughout Chapter 12, the NDP places significant emphasis on the need to professionalize the South African police service with training. It states that police training needs to be well-informed of current developments in crime trends, and the security instruction standards and partnerships with the private sector and universities should increase police competence. Now, members will remember, we had already in the past had interactions on the police academy as part of Elisa Hall. We also had some interactions on other jurisdictions that also give training. So this morning, here it say, well, it's back to basics, but it's also implementation of NDP. Where are we in terms of training? What is the gaps, what can be done more to ensure that our policemen and women are ready to do their tasks efficiently. And that's really this debate this morning, because remember, in a few weeks' time we will go to the budget hearings, and it's also to ensure that the members are okay with the current trends. When we go to the budget in March, that we make sure that there is the necessary budgetary support, but also from a strategic and tactical perspective, the necessary ingredients to make sure that SAPS members are able to fulfill their duties effectively. So that's really our strategic objective this morning. And I want to also thank the researchers for excellent work on Paul University as well as the front training. We will do that. And also IPET. We've also identified in our interactions with IPET that there is a need for SAPWA affiliated training that will be able to assist the members, and that they also must, you know, not only rely on SAPS for their training, but they must also get other avenues. And the morning is really to ascertain what is the progress with regard to that, and what can we deduce from the presentations. So that is really the aim of this morning's activity. Maybe before we give an opportunity, I'm going to first ask the members to introduce themselves. Then for Lieutenant Gwinya just to also introduce the delegation. But I want, before we start with the formal briefing, also just give the Lieutenant General just maybe for 2 minutes, just an assurance to the Portfolio Committee that in terms of Thursday, the opening of Parliament, that everything is ready from a SAPS perspective and everybody is in place. Also, maybe also welcome to Lieutenant General Matakata. He is the Deputy Head of the DCI. Welcome to you as well. Good to see you here. Let's start with the honourable members to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Samanani. Ikano Helen Bele, Member of the Commission.
Good morning, Maureen Helen, also a Member of the Committee.
Goedemorgen, dames en heren. Mijn naam is Angie Mulewati, lid van de committee bij de AP.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jerome Marquette, a member of this committee.
No, Madam Chair, we've got apologies from Honourable Ramakani pertaining to the Transport Committee, and Honourable Knobald is also not present today.
Is that your apologies?
15 is from Nguyen.
Thank you very much. Very good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Police. Let me begin by apologizing on behalf of the Acting National Commissioner, who could not make it due to other commitments. I will then introduce the team that is accompanying me today, starting with Lieutenant General Mukwanazi, who is currently the Divisional Commissioner, Human Resource Development. May I request that you rise as I introduce the team. We then have Lieutenant General Matakata, the Deputy National Head of the DPCI. We have Major General Sintumule, the Competent Head Leadership and International Development, HRD. We also have Brigadier Kutsia, the Commander of the Pearl Academy. Brigadier Claude Duong, the Session Head, International Development, HRD. We have Tanner Stein, the Parliamentary Officer, who is always here to support us. Thank you very much, Chair.
Can we just get type of delegation and then I'll give Pop Blue as well as SARP also the opportunity to introduce the delegations. Acting ED.
Thanks, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Israel Khamanyane, Acting Executive Director for the ITIPS. With me I've got Mbate Akoso Tokolo, that's with me on my right. Is the Provincial Head, IP Western Cape. Then with us is our PLO, Deputy Director, Dr. Makoti Chris. Thanks very much, Sir, and Honourable Members.
Thank you. Sapu, SG.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not a delegate. With me I've got Mrs. Mulepa and Sandra.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by apologizing on behalf of my President, Mr. Mpokunika, who could not make it today because of other commitments. I'm Thandekile Mkhize, the first Vice President of SABO, and I'm accompanied by my Second Vice President, Mr. Thabo Mososa. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very well. Thank you very much. We welcome also to unions. I look forward to the input. I will immediately go to SAPS. Maybe just 2 minutes that we can get assurance that SAPS is ready for the opening of Parliament, and then we can go to the first briefing on the foreign planning. General?
Thank you very much, Chair. In terms of the state of readiness to ensure that we deliver a safe state of the nation address, all systems are in place. We deployed operational forces. We have an operational plan that is ready. We are going to be apologetic in executing our mandate. At the same time, we will be appealing to everyone who will be attending the sauna to ensure that they abide by the law. In terms of members of the SAPS, we will be executing our mandate within the confines of the law, but then when it comes to those who will be breaking law, we will be ready also for that. We will be doing whatever that is expected of us within the confines of the law. As the SAPS, we're looking forward to delivering a safe honor that will also be sustaining what we are known for in terms of securing all big events in the country. Having said that, going back to the presentations, Chair, we have been requested to do a briefing on foreign training on the professionalizing of the police by the SAPS and DPCI. And secondly, we've been requested to give an evaluation briefing on the high police university and training programs by SAPS, that is by SAPS Unison Subscope Crew and ISS. We will be doing an evaluation on behalf of the organization. In terms of the first presentation that talks to foreign training chair, we do not have separate presentations with the DPCI. The reason being that the training within the DPCI is still coordinated within SAPS. DPCI do not yet have their own budget for purpose of training and other programs. We're still working together. However, should there be a need for the DPCI to talk on specific training that was attended, General Matakada will be there to respond to it. In terms of the presentation, we will have Lieutenant General Mkwanazi, the Divisional Commissioner, HRD, presenting. Oh, I will then hand over to him, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and the Chairman. Honourable Chair, the presentation that is before you on screen, it talks to us about the foreign training attended by the House members. And also it will include the training that House will have provided to other countries. We put out on the second slide that you have the table of content of our presentation is going to unfold. I'm not going to elaborate much on that, I'm sure you can be able to read that on the screen. And the second slide talks about the reference to what Jeremy has already spoken about, the briefing in terms of the foreign training. So I've got three chairs to the slide number four, which is the introduction. Chair, we said that the SAPS, we are faced with challenges of globalization and the impact that the globalization has on transnational crime. And because of that, there's a need for cooperation and liaising on knowledge training and development by different agencies all over the world. The international development strategy which the SAPS has adopted, it focuses mainly on four critical areas. As you can see, the chair, we've broken it down by looking at the external training where the SAPS is going to go up and participate on other training initiatives presented by other international agencies, police agencies. And secondly, the focus area talks about the development assistance. Now, this is where the SAPS is going to be assisting other countries that need our support, such as Sudan, for instance. And the third one is the SAPS having to participate in seminars, conferences, and workshops, which are some of them held in the country and some of them are held abroad. And we are also going to participate in study visits, which we hosting countries coming to South Africa, as well as South Africa also attending to the work study in other countries abroad. So I must emphasize again when I say SAPS, I'm also including the DPCI in this regard. The following slide, Chair, is providing the breakdown of the international training which was provided in the current financial year of 2015-16. And we broke it down as the country where this training was involved, and the specific cause and the venue where this training took place, as well as the number of trained members and the budget associated with that. We did not include the specific units that attended the specific training programs, but it's different units within the SAPS, including the DPCI in this regard. So as you can see, the first country that was involved in this particular training program, it is the Republic of China. The list of courses that you have over the being the criminal investigative techniques, the social management capacity building for senior female officers, the language, which we've seen a lot of quite extensive need of these South African police officers to try and learn different languages. It's not only the Chinese language. We've run a lot of training programs with regard to the French and Portuguese and many other languages that we empower officers to learn, because they deal with not only South African citizens in the Republic, but also the inhibitions of the visiting individuals into the country as well. So it's important to be able to communicate with them. The maritime law enforcement, it's a training program that we attended, the international intermediate senior law enforcement official, entry and exit administration, the theory of national security. Now, these are all the training programs, Chair, that we held as in specific countries, as you can see, of which a number of them were in China, only one of those that was conducted in South Africa. So if I move over to the following slide, on that one we have training programs that involve the United States of America, the list of training programs, the first one being the anti-terrorism and anti-piracy, the financial investigations, program on terrorism and security studies, the law enforcement development, training course, International Association of Chiefs of Police Conference, Emerging Maritime Security Studies, Emerging Security Studies, and Cyber Security Studies, specifically for unified DPCI and our current intelligence. And these training programs were conducted in different countries, one being in the USA itself, and the others in Seychelles, in Botswana, in South Africa, as well as Germany. The going first to the next slide, Chair, we have a number of other countries that we're involved with. In Belgium, for instance, there was a port logistic program that was a training course that was held in South Africa. The courage was involved on the initial sovereign, which is the flying of the aircraft that you have. It's the UK that was involved and conducted in the United Kingdom. And in France, there was also involvement of craft management training, which was conducted in France. You know, that's where we changed our learning to try and improve on our craft management capacity in the organization. In Netherlands, there was a meeting on police below sea level. Now, this is a waterborne type of training that was presented over there. Hungary, we had a competition with regard to our snipers. It is important for them to participate in such competitions so they can learn on the counter-sniping techniques and the rest, competing with other international agencies. Coming back to the region, Chair, we see a number of intervention or causes and that were presented under the banner of SARCO training. We see them there on the screen, one being the environmental crimes, which was held in Zambia, the regional training on stolen, lost, and fraudulent documents, which was held in Lesotho, command and leadership for senior policemen, which was held in Namibia, the trafficking in human beings, that was held in Malawi, the crime intelligence gathering and analysis, the program which was held in Zimbabwe, the conference on cybercrime in South Africa, and the data protection, which was also held in Zimbabwe. Under the African Development Assistance Provided, now this is training, all of them were presented in South Africa. We're involving three countries, one being Namibia, Botswana, and DRC. Now this is where you bring their police officers into South Africa so they get to learn on some of our techniques on how we tackle crime in different areas. We presented a list of courses, one being the Detective Commander's Learning Program, the Aviation Training, the Resolving of Crime, Advanced Crime Scenes, Exchange Program on Organizational Development, the Crime Intelligence Gathering Techniques, the Technical Training in terms of Street Survival, Basic Parachuting, Crime Intelligence Gathering also in Botswana, as well as the Advanced UIP Program. Now these are all the courses that were presented in the three countries, as listed on this lecture. As I indicated earlier, that it is training programs as well as workshops that we attend, that we participate on, which are focus areas that I've explained in the beginning. You see, Chair, the study visits which were hosted by South Africa, by the SAPS specific. Now we had officials from Qatar, which we had to assist them on the establishment of Police Training College, as well as the CANA. We assisted them in building that capacity. So they came here for a study visit to get to learn the good practices that SAPS has. The Kenyan Police Agency also participated, and we assisted them in terms of organizational structure as well as the police training program, how we structure it and how we present our police training. In Namibian Police Agency, we assisted them in the building of capacity on operational structure as well as police training. And the Chinese Police Agency, which came to the Republic of South Africa, we provide them the police training, enhancement of police cooperation between the two countries. The Bangladesh assisted them with construction and development of their police agency. So there are international development programs that are pending, which will receive requests as they are reflected on the screen, which we still have to attend to as the South African Police Service. It comes from those countries that are listed in the Sutu, Ivory Coast, Somalia, Niger, and the Congo Brazzaville, as well as Kenya, to mention a few. In conclusion, Chair, with regard to our international training, we want to mention that the SAPS remains committed to partner and join efforts with regional, continental, and international counterparts in the fight against crime in transnational crime. Hence, these training and workshops are going to be the ongoing thing. Thank you very much for this presentation.
Thank you very much. I think let's do the other presentations as well, and then we'll go to questions. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Sharon Panazi will do the other presentation as well. In terms of the request, it says evaluation briefing on the Pearl Police University. For purposes of the presentation, the Pearl Institution is known as an academy by reason that it's not yet accredited as a university. Therefore, it will be referred to as academy as we proceed with the presentation. I'll hand over to General Connors. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. We have prepared a presentation in this regard with the SAPS Academy Pearl. If you go straight to the next slide, that will break down the table of content of how our presentation is going to unfold. Chair, I'm not going to elaborate more on the slide following that, but I'm going to already spoken to. So I'll go straight to the background information with regard to PAR. As it is reflected on the screen, Chair, the SAPS Academy PAR was established in 1990. Now, during that year, the SAPS College was mainly for advanced training, and it presented candidate officers' course to police officers. And this was intended for members to become commissioned officers with the rank of lieutenant and high. In 1996, this SAPS Training College, it provided the first course in the development of officers. Now in 2002, going forward, the SAPS Management and Media Leadership Development Institute, which was held in PAR, was presented in PAR, again was intended to develop the officers in the SAPS. And in the year 2008, Chair, we then moved towards what we named the professionalization of the SAPS. We then embark on the accreditation process to make sure that the SAPS is accredited by SACETA, as it is explained on the slide. In 2013, only then we started embarking on a project of changing this academy with the intention of making it a university. And when the approach that the SAPS management conducted at the time was to liaise and engage with the University of South Africa. And engaging with the University of South Africa, Chair, there was a memorandum of understanding that was signed between the SPS and the University of South Africa. And this memorandum of agreement, it speaks about a 7-year project. So it simply means that it will have probably taken an average of 7 years for the SPS to have its own university. Now this is starting in 2013. Now the MOU, if I were to go into details with it, Chair, it has specific key objectives, which I will explain it. The first one was intended to build capacity for academic development, teaching and learning. The second one was the establishment of the research capacity that will engage high quality and creative studies that will impact positively on policy. The third key objective was to build capacity to enhance community engagement. The fourth key objective is establishment of an optimal campus for South Academy Park with appropriate administrative and infrastructure support. The following key objective was referred to the transfer of skills and to build a trainer, the facilitator, and the tutor capacity within the South African Police Service. The following key objective was to enhance police education, training towards the professional police service, and the following one was the facilitation of the accreditation of the SAPS Academy PAL as a training provider for higher education, which we refer to as the university. Now, if I explain in details with regard to the progress made on each of these key objectives, Chair and Honorable Members, the key objective one, the building of capacity for academic development, teaching and learning. I can say, Chair, as the SAPS, the progress made that we can report today is that the students that are attending training within the environment, their needs were identified and continuously provided by UNISA and SAPS tutors, as well as the learning support. The tutorial regularly provide the tutors to the learners. We've had two seminars with regard to the police brutality that was presented within the academy. We had also two seminars regarding women in leadership. Chair, the study guides in terms of the UNISA mobile library visit the academy once a month. And the Women in Leadership Seminar, which the LAPS Police Service internationally measure that the police women in leadership are developed and empowered to efficiently and effectively perform their duties when mentoring and coaching other women in LAPS. Now, you will agree with me, Chair, that as has been said in the past within the South, that we have to make sure that there is equal representation in terms of gender within the organization. So therefore, it is important for the LAPS to make sure that we develop our colleagues, women colleagues that we have in the organization, Chair. Going over to the three key objectives, which is the establishment of the research capability that will engage with high-quality and creative studies that will impact positive on policing. The progress in this regard, Chair, the draft research strategy for SAPS was developed and submitted to UNISA for inputs. However, in this key objective, Chair, we still have the projects that are still yet to be developed in the coming financial year. As they are listed there on the screen, one of them being the teaching and learning policy, the admission and RPL policy, the curriculum development policy, recruitment and human development policy, as well as library policy. Those are still pending, Chair. They will be attended to in the coming financial year. The policy objective there, which is the building of capacity to enhance community engagement. Again, this has to still happen in the coming financial year. We said as a SAPS we need to consult with UNISA. The main reason for this is that we both have to develop a common framework about what you understand when you talk community engagement. And once that is done, then only then we'll be able to develop a policy in this regard on community engagement. The following key objective, the establishment of an optimal campus for the SAPS Academy Park with appropriate administrative and infrastructure support. The progress that we've made thus far in this regard, we can report that a full audit on infrastructure and resources was conducted, and the library action plan has been implemented partially. The progress is sitting at 9%. The ICT project plan has been developed, also sitting at 50%. We have also the achievement in this regard was that the SAPS Academy PAL has been registered, accredited as a UNISA exam center, and this is exclusively for the use by the police employees and members. The student council has also been established within the academy. Following key objective, Chair, the transfer of skills and building trainer facilitators and tutor capacity. In this regard, Chair, UNISA will have assisted the SAPS members in terms of developing the members as tutors so they're able to present this bachelor of police degree. So in this regard, 11 members have been registered by UNIBA as tutors and are presenting this bachelor of police to the police members that are attending training program. 16 trainers are enrolled for undergraduate and postgraduate qualification in order to receive the realization of that objective. The following one chair, the objective talked about the enhanced police education and training towards a professional police service. The progress made in this regard, Chair, is that the skills audit has been completed, which was conducted by the SPS and has been submitted to UNISA. We are still waiting for UNISA to provide the SPS the development plan for tutors and administrative personnel in the academy. We, Chair, in trying to professionalize the environment, we understand that not all the skills required are within the SPS. We have to go out there and employ those that are qualified in different fields. We have identified the field of training English, sociology, and criminology. In this regard, we have had an additional 8 posts advertised to fill those gaps, to get the qualified people to be able to present these qualifications. 8 of us attended a conference in criminology and entomology by Ethnology South Africa. Key objective 7, Chair, talks about the facilitation by UNISA to have the SPS Academy PAL accredited as a training provider for higher education. Chair, I can report on this one that the engagement with the Department of Higher Education is unlevel. Although it's an indicator that it does not form part of the priority by Department of Higher Education, but the engagement is underway in this regard anyways. We continue building infrastructure so that it is in line with the requirement of with the Department of Education to be able to develop this academy as the university chair. That's the end of the key objective with regard to the memorandum of understanding which was signed by the SATS and UNISA. Perhaps again to summarize on that, Chair, is that this MOU is in twofold. One talks about assisting the SATS to develop capacity in terms of tutors and develop it in terms of other training programs that needs to be accredited. We've got a number of them that has been accredited, which I'll talk to you later. And on the other side, the objective mainly focuses on the coordination or the facilitation of the accreditation of the academy to the university. So UNISA is going to assist the ACTS in this regard. That's what was envisaged in the MOU. Honorable Chair, if I go on and talk about the academy itself, PAL, why ACTS Academy PAL? Why do you identify this academy, which I referred to earlier that has been in existence for many years, why we identify this academy PAL to be a university or an institution of higher education? The objectives stipulated on the slide, Chair, it refers to 4 categories. One of them, we said, is to develop the desired profile of a leader within the SPS. The second one, Chair, we say we want to develop our own talent to make sure that we have the professional policing, police service that we have been referred to within the National Development Plan. And the third one is ensuring that the preservation of a culture, a culture being what is taught in our basic training academies of what the do's and the don'ts in the organization. Now, obviously, for that culture taught to the most junior members, it has to be preserved when they go out there to the station and they continue working. So they need to be managed by people that know what the culture is. So basically, bringing the leaders within this academy to make sure that there's a continuation of that as they go out there to manage the rest of the members of the organization, they make sure that that culture of the SAPS, it is preserved. And last objective there is about providing training and development to the rest of our colleagues international on the cooperating countries that require assistance from within training. Previously, when I spoke about international training, I've mentioned of some countries that came into South Africa and so that you assisted them with training. So that is one objective of the academy. Continuing with the presentation, Chair, I can also indicate that before I explain all the training programs that have been presented within the academy, it is important for me to explain the three focus areas, one, how we want to differentiate the training programs within the academy. One being the operational management, the generic operational management. We want to teach the relief commander working at that police station on how to manage the police station. That's the big way to focus it. The second focus area talks about leadership and management program. Now this involves the different levels of leadership and management levels within the organization, including myself, to get to know the do's and the don'ts and on management within different environments in the organization. And the third focus area, it is the civil academic development, so that we can break and say that we have highly educated police officers that can assist the organization with regard to doing proper research on the cohesiveness of the SATS so that they can help us to improve our operations going forward. Then, going further to the rest of the training programs that are provided within the environment that I've explained above, there's a list of them that you see on the screen. The third one talks about the Executive Development Learning Program. The target group on this one are senior managers within the SATS, although not accredited as yet. But the objective of this training program is to equip senior managers with knowledge, skill, and attitude to enhance the delivery within the organization. And the following one, which I refer to, Station Managers Learning Program, or still not yet accredited, but the target group are station commanders on this chair, to also empower them to manage the station according to the required standard and in adherence to the police prescripts. The following one, Chair, is the what you refer to as OCT, the Operational Commanders Training Program. And it is focused, or target group on that are operational commanders not yet accredited as well. And this one is intended to equip the operational members with necessary skills, knowledge, and ability to plan, such as the sonar that you're going to be having in a few years' time. They get to be trained on the throwing up of those operational plans and many of the operations to ensure the safe and secure environment for all involved in those operations. The following other programs, Chair, the Detective Commanders Learning Program, which is directed towards the detective commanders, is not accredited as well. Again, to empower them with necessary skills to be able to manage those environments. The Team Management Leadership Program, we're not only developing the officers in this regard, we're also focusing on those that are moving towards becoming officers and moving towards leadership program. As you can see, the shared dual learning program, management learning program, that we also bring in this the warrant officers to equip them so that we do not just appoint a person as an officer and only then we send the person for training. We want to train them so that they are ready to move to the next stage, so they are able to manage respective environments. So that's why we're involving the warrant officers in this one. The MMLP program, the Middle Management Learning Program, which is on different levels of the organization between the level of major to planners. This is what you refer to in the public sector as deputy directors and assistant directors. We are teaching them and equipping them to be able to manage those resources allocated to them. And majority of them are charged with responsibility to manage police stations and different components within the provincial level as well as the health list. And with that, you've got human and physical resources and the budget they need to manage. So they need to be skilled to know how to manage such institutions. For instance, in our own training academies, where we have learners and we have to feed them and we've got resources, physical resources associated with that. So we want to equip those within the level with the skills to enable them to manage the environment. With this chair, we have also a basic management learning program. Now, basically, we're trying to provide skills to the most junior members within the organization for them to understand they are being managed in a certain manner and they get to understand what are the duties of the supervisor, the principles in management. And when the supervisor expects them to do certain things, they must be able to understand that what informed the supervisor to manage them in that manner. That they understand the basic management principle skills That's why we provide this training to the most junior ones, to try and push them towards that management positions. Obviously, not all of them end up in a leadership positions, but we are able to identify those capabilities to become leaders in the organization from that those training programs. The following one talks about the basic supervisor learning program, and this is simply directed to the Public Service Act employees, those that are not police officers specifically. Again, helping them to understand the management principles, and all the learning there, just for them to get to understand also the rest of what is happening within the organization. Because we've got different employment categories within the organization. We've got those that are police officers, and we've got those that are operational support within the organization that provide specific support, and we have those that are providing generic support within the organization. So we need to equip everybody within the organization so they get to understand. The Relief Commander Training Program, which has got to earlier chair with regard to the training of those relief commanders within the police station, so they get to know how to inspect the public book of an employee. They need to know how to stand parade, to inspection on parade, and all the relevant registers. That first line of inspection that we need to develop the capacity in this program. The following one, Chair, is the project management, practical project management, and this one is provided by UNISA, which is targeted towards the senior managers in the organization, and again to empower them on getting to understand the project management skills. The following one is the Safety and Security Executive Development Program, again provided by UNISA, and this one is also targeted to the senior managers. When we refer to senior managers, we're talking about those at level 13 and above. The Safe and Security Executive Development Program has been accredited by UNISA. And the last one that is, we've got currently a first year, second and third year students attending at the level of Constable to Warrant Officer, which is the highest group, has also been accredited by UNISA, and it is our flagship program, the Bachelor of Arts in Police Science. And again, this one is to equip the learners with skills to manage the resources and how to respond to the needs of the community. So that is directed at professionalization of the police. And the main. The following return on investment, if we break it down in details in terms of specific program that the UNISA provide, one being the Bachelor of Arts on Police the Science. You'll notice there on the slide, Chair, that the total cost of this project is just over 9 million rand. In this regard, this program has been running for the 3 years, 2014, 2015, as well as the intake that is starting at the beginning of this year, 2016. We've got a total number of 96 of our employees that are doing the third year in this program. And we've got, again, a total number of 42 which are doing their second year. And thus far, there's a total number of 23 of our employees that are enrolled for first year. And all these trainees are in the Resilience Academy PAM. So this degree, Bachelor of Arts degree, has been presented within the academy, as we've explained earlier. And the following practical project management program have cost the SAPS 2.1 million rand. And again, we can say 2014-15, we've enrolled a total of 25 students on this one, and they were all declared competent. And in 2015-16, the current financial year, there was a total number of 28 that were enrolled, and all of them were declared competent. Like I said, again, Chair, that it is not the SAPS that is providing this, it is UNISA. The following one, the Safety and Security Executive Development Program, Chair, the total cost on this one, the total is 2.8 million rand. Now, we've broken it down that the 2.8 million rand is not all of it that came from the SAPS budget. We've got 1.5 million rand that came from the SAPS budget, and a total of 1.3 which come from SACETA, as is explained in the Chair. A total of 48 students were enrolled on this one in the two financial years, the previous one and the current financial year. The previous financial year of 24 that were enrolled, 23 were competent, and only one that was not yet competent. In the current financial year, 2024, this was enrolled. They are still busy with the project, so it has not concluded, so you cannot promise us on this. Honorable Chair, when I conclude the last second, the last line, in terms of the way forward, the current police management have felt that it is important that we as the ACDS review the approach of establishing a police university within academy. Like I said earlier, there is a assistance by the UNISA in terms of accreditation of programs. On the other side, establishment of the university. So there's quite a lot of work done in terms of the accreditation part, and whereas the coordination of the establishment of the university, it is the mandate of the Department of Higher Education to register to accredit the academy and the university. Now, UNISA is only facilitating in this regard. So the approach in terms of this, the seminar project approach, is something that the management feel that perhaps we might want to review this approach. We also have to continuously with number of years and many other programs that are taught in the organization, not only that are presented within the academy file. There's quite a number of them that are from other universities, for instance, like I mentioned, Pochestrom. We've got other programs that have been presented in those academies, those universities. We feel that as management, we need to assess and return on investment and the value added on all these programs that are outsourced. Because we need to evaluate and check whether are they assisting the SCDS to deliver the professional services that is expected of the SCDS. Again, all these leadership programs for impact, and I'm sure the Honorable Chair of the Committee will agree with me that as much as we've presented here that we are training a leader, a relief commander, to know how to conduct inspections and pocketbooks, know how to manage the relief at the police stations. When we do the assessment, we need to be able to see whether is our program really teaching that person to know how to manage that relief. Because if we continue providing this program and not doing an assessment, impact assessment of those programs, we might just be wasting our time and money. So it is important that the management felt that it is important that we might want to review all these programs combined and see if maybe there are some of them that are relevant, some of them that might need some adjustments on those. And lastly, Chair, it is just the continuous impact assessment that needs to be conducted within the organization, probably on different training questioning or training programs that you are having as an organization, presented in Academy PAL, SCDS Academy PAL, as well as other academies around the country that they have. That concludes my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, we are saying the need to professionalize the SACS has been identified in the National Development Plan, and therefore we do not have any choice but to implement. We are saying we will be training members of the SACS in all levels. By using that, we expect of every member, from the lowest to the highest, to know what is it that is expected of us in executing our roles. We are also saying, as members of the SAPS, whenever, being at the lowest level, when you see a van driving past you, you need to identify and say, what is it, what role am I playing as the member to contribute towards the bigger picture of the organization? The continuous assistance which General Mukwanazi has referred to, Chair, we are of the view that it is very much important. We are not excited by the quantities. We need to ensure that indeed the training that we are paying for does deliver what is expected. Also, we want to ensure that the training delivered is also talking to the best basic approach which we decided to go to as the SAPS. Chair, going further, I think we will be ready to take questions if there is any. Thank you.
Thank you. The head of the BCI is to add a research?
No, thank you, Chair. I will only respond to the specific questions for the BCI.
Thank you very much for the presentations. We appreciate. We will now go to questions. I'll take a few and then we'll go to Honorable Redenais and to the other members. I just maybe want to, looking at two presentations, I want to ask a process question in terms of decision tree. What, for instance, the issue of foreign training, how does SAPS management decide on a foreign course? Is there, for instance, a mechanism to say, well, this is the need, we have benchmarked various courses in various jurisdictions, this is our analysis, and of course a cost analysis. Is that done, or is it like, for instance, if there's an advertisement somewhere of a course, somewhere, if a presentation is made and signed off by the DIPCOM, there goes the captain and the colonel. I want to get the strategic thrust under that decision tree. For instance, I see BPCI is also going to Italy for subground. How do you evaluate that? The countries do you choose? Is there a kind of criteria? Is there a kind of evaluation system whereby you decide, well, this country is expert, that's where we get the value. In terms of the first presentation, it's quite in certain specific specialized courses. Perhaps it's only sending one person. So I want to know, what is the post attendance value? Is it training the trainers, or is it the once-off, and that's that? It's not dripping down to the organization. That's just my one concern. In the second presentation, the issue of non-accreditation. Now, of course, General Panazzi, you're new in the air. You must now take this portfolio forward. But in most of the cases of middle management, as well as below that, it's clear on the presentation, it's not related to courses. And I think there was a concern previously, last year we got a presentation as well from various higher learning institutions where senior staff members are involved in. Again, what is the decision tree? How do you decide six members are going to Harvard, five members is going to University of Pretoria? Is it an individualized exercise, or is it saying, well, looking at the needs of the organization for the next 3 to 5 years, we need specialized strategic skills at this level, targeting major generals, civilian generals. It has to be the views, because our question, I think, last year was about the ad hoc approach in dealing with training at the various levels. Is there a kind of master plan to ensure that we develop the right appropriate leadership core for SAPS going forward? Honourable Realist.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just two quick preliminary questions. I'm trying to understand the cost calculation of some of these programs. So in certain instances, it really does make a lot of sense, rand and cents, if you will, because 123 people are paying for 900,000. But then you look at the International Association of Chiefs of Police Conference, where two people, and so I'm assuming it may have been the now suspended National Police Commissioner, I don't know the detail, and there was 160,000 rand for two people. Similarly, one person going next door to Namibia in the commander leadership of senior police woman was 190,000 rand. So what influences that kind of discrepancy, if you will, in the cost? I'm sure it has to do with things and all those other things, but I'd just like to have something to say. What I'm happy to see about the training is that there's clearly a very big focus on crime intelligence, including gathering analysis and counterterrorism, cybercrime. These are critical, and I hope that we will see the fruit of it in crime intelligence division itself, which we all know is in serious need of capacitation. But my question relates specifically to crowd management training. I see that only four officers were trained in this. And given the Harlem Commission recommendations and the National Development Plan, will there be a specific focus in the coming financial year on specifically crowd management and public order policing? As an aside, having done this in France, there was some concern about the French model, which has been expressed by the Institute for Security Studies, among others, that it's a very confrontational, personal, enclosed spaces, very militaristic, command and control, all of that. Would there be, what other models are being considered, and that's what influenced the decision to go to France? Because I personally would like to hear focus when it comes to public order police on intelligence gathering, and to prevent it reaching the situations that we often see. Then my final question, I'm really excited about the Bachelor of Police Science and the work that has been done in this regard. I think it is important for professionalizing the service, not that the degree is necessary to be a police officer, but I do think it's good. My question specifically in terms of the curriculum is, what are the plans for incorporating public order policing and community engagement as foundations of the curriculum? Will or do students have the option to specialize in a specific area of policing, for example, through electives in the third year, maybe in public order policing, in crime intelligence, in cyber security, and whether this is being looked into? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Then Honourable Mulabachi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is similar to what Honourable Legend has asked, but then attached to something else. Just something that jumps out at me is slide 8 in the presentation about the foreign training. The course that was done in the UK, that's labelled Initial Sovereign. Just to ask, because that's the only course that I can't deduce what its content and its main issues are, simply from the label. Let us just get an explanation for clarity of what that course is about, being called Initial Sovereign. And then echoing the broad question that my colleague asked, is just an explanation on the specific costs for this one, because you know there were two people for 1.3 million, whereas you know we have two people in the Netherlands just rolls down for less than 10% of that. And I know the pound is strong, but it's not that strong. So this gets an explanation of that. My second question is, speaking of some foreign currencies, we know that the rand is going to go through a bit of trouble, being depreciated for the short to medium term. So going forward with the focus on foreign trading, given that it is important for skills development, capacity building within the SAS and maintaining those international partnerships. Is there contingency planning in the SAS in terms of financial planning to take into account the depreciation of the rand and the concomitant strength of the foreign currencies that when we travel there, we do the necessary cost trimming as well as make allocation in the budgets going forward in the medium term, that we can still maintain that without compromising the other spending priorities. And then my third question is the presentation on the Paul Assess Academy. Just on slide 16, the first third relating to the intake and enrollment figures for the Bachelor of Arts Police Science degree. I just need a detailed explanation of how these numbers all relate to each other. Because, for example, you know, in each year is an enrollment figure that is given, but it doesn't add up. The numbers in each year don't add up to that. I would assume that the enrollment in that year refers to everybody who comes in across the board. I might be understanding something there, if I can just get clarity on that. And then when you look at the progression from 2014 to 15 to 16, because you would assume that the first year becomes second year the next year and becomes third year and so on, those numbers are translating when you go from each year from first to second year. If I can just get an understanding of why that's the case. Is that dropouts? What's the reason for that? And then also linked to that, it's kind of a three-part question. In 2014, I see that there was an intake at second and third year already, and just to understand the reason and the selection criteria behind that, had there been prior academic assessments that this person was effectively at second year level and therefore could jump in midstream of that bachelor degree, because again, in terms of how universities normally work, is you start the first year, in the fourth years, and then get the degree. So if there's a reason for why some of the intake and the students were able to jump in the second or third year from the first year of that bachelor, what the reason for that was?
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Sen. On page 7, you speak of your cybercrime expert, and you only list one that is trained or to be trained. I'm not sure. But my question is, don't you feel it's too little, especially that the cybercrime still is very, very much needed in us. My next question is on the, still on page 8. You speak of enrolling postgraduates and in an academy, before it even becomes a university, is this possible or is it try? I'm not sure. My next question is on, do you have any foreign funding in this academy? And if you do, tell us about it. And you also mentioned the station manager's learning program for station managers. Where does it lead the cluster commanders who needs a lot of change? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bashi, Honorable Bija.
Thank you, Chairperson. With foreign training, I see we have 15 different foreign countries that we send our members for training. So I wanted to know the criteria used to determine a country for a specific training. But then I was already covered by the Chairperson. So I would like to ask him, I see the program is 15 to 16. So with the 15 training already done, do you see any impact, good impact, on the ground that matches the amount used for training? Because obviously some have been there already and we expect a change before and after.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Mukona, for the presentation. In slide 6, why all these trainings are so expensive? My second question, in slide 6 and 7, why are the training budget is zero? My third question, I heard you said police below sea level. What does that mean? My next question, when was this MOU with UNICA signed? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maude.
Hey, Jefferson, just to clarify, those officers that are being trained here, I would like to believe they are senior officers, which will mean that the training might be even some of them that are trained, they are trained in order to train other people. And it doesn't show the courses or how long do they take and so on and so on. That's why maybe the disparities in the amounts. Maybe that might explain one was trained for 2 days, the other one for 2 weeks and so on and so on. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Members. General Mourinho and your team, you're welcome to respond.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of responding to the questions, we will have everyone from HRD responding. Firstly, talking to the issue of what informs foreign training, Chair, in his presentation, General Mukwanadi indicated that the global trend in transnational crime is one of the things that informs the need for us to ensure that there is foreign training. In terms of the criteria which we apply in choosing either a country or members, on an annual basis, we come up with the annual performance plan that we have been informed by the strategic plan emanating also from the National Development Plan. We will then identify the priorities. Depending on the priorities, we will then identify those needs that top the priorities, which will and speak to the different programs. If I were to give an example, your program 3, detectives, your program 2, visible policing. when it comes to the issue of which country how do we identify a country that will be giving us the best training? In terms of that one, we still have to assess, I'm not sure if any of our colleagues will be in a position to respond to that one, but with the 8 days in this new post, we already scheduled a meeting for Wednesday, whereby they will be presenting on all the different courses and programs that are provided within CUNY. That will be taken care of. Also, in terms of this presentation, we have indicated that we will be doing an assessment also on the impact in terms also of do we get a return on investment in terms of money that we are spending on those courses. The issue of the accredited courses, how do we decide on the number? It also talks to the priorities. I won't be talking to the cost calculation. We'll leave it to the colleagues from the HR environment themselves. In terms of crowd management and public order policy, that is a priority within the organization. We have been continuously being labeled, and that says to us there is a need for us to ensure that we enhance the training that was given to us in terms of crowd management and public order policy. But we also decided that we won't be only focusing on local training. We'll also look at other countries with the expertise. For example, France, which was identified as one of those. But also, emanating from the Maritana Commission report, there is also a recommendation. We are all aware that the minister has already put together a committee that will ensure that they assist the organization in terms of implementing those recommendations amongst others. Crowd management and public order policing is also included. Moving forward, it will be continuously a priority until we assure that members of the SHS are policing crowd as required within the Constitution. General Kwana will talk to the issue of the sovereign initials, the sovereign, which is a bit costly. Contingency planning within the SOPS, one of the basic needs is that in whatever that we are doing, there must always be a contingency plan. We are aware of what is happening in the country. Our planning is continuously informed by the continuous changes. We will be ready to police the country with the budget that is given to us. We will be able to prioritize and ensure that policing doesn't suffer. In terms of the cybercrime aspects, General Masakata will talk to that. Coming to the issue of the issue of where are the cluster commanders, where do they feature in terms of the program? We are currently implementing, engaging also on the concept of the cluster commander. We assessed the situation after the concept was introduced, and we felt that it has not yet begun to give us, but we are expecting. Hence, we are engaging again. The engagement also includes, amongst others, identifying what are the needs, what are the gaps, which will then inform the training need for the cluster commanders. Safe to say, most of the cluster commanders will have been seasoned members of the SAPS who have underwent a number of programs in training, your basic, your middle management. Most of them are at the SMS levels, except for the small police stations. But even those who have underwent the basic and the middle management commander course. The police below sea level, General Kanazi will talk to that. in terms of whether the senior officers that have been trained, are they trained as trainers? In some of the programs, yes, we will be having those that are trained as trainers. However, there will be a situation where an individual will be sent to attend a seminar. Coming back from the seminar, it is expected of members to compile a report which will be then shared with other environments to ensure that the knowledge that we have gathered in that seminar is disseminated within the organization. That applies not only for international program that we'll be attending, but also local. When you come back, it is expected that you give feedback, and that report is not only kept for its environment. It is shared within the training to ensure that it also informs other environments. I will then give over to Chandram Kwanazi to answer those questions which I will not have attended to. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Maybe just before General Kwanazi, maybe somebody else can do my first question in terms of the decision tree. When there's indeed the process with that on deciding on the various jurisdictions, as I've mentioned, is there, for instance, analysis? Is there currently a weight given to certain characteristics before you decide on a project? I just want to know that. If there's not, of course, you indicated next week there will be a process with steps, but as for the record, whether there's indeed an objective model to weight and say, well, do you think public order policing, maybe Russia is better than France, or in terms of cybercrime, Italy is better than India, whatever, you know, weighing options before you make a decision for engagement. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. I'm going to, maybe not in a chronological order, try to respond to some of the questions that have been raised. I hope the members will forgive me for that. The parents coming to what the Chair is asking, the SCPS looks at the priorities of the organization in determining the trade programs that is attended to. And obviously with that, because of what Jaron has referred to, the what you said earlier, in terms of the challenges that we're facing, we've got different agencies or associations that we belong to as SAPS. So we attend seminars and conferences that are presented by that help with those agencies, Interpol, SARCO, and those other agencies that help. And with that, then the engagement and the exchange of the discussions that are taking place. So that's where we get to come back with information about a specific crime and a specific country, perhaps that might have come up with certain strategy to resolve that one which we might be facing in South Africa. So that then gets decided by management, and that's how prioritization come about. And obviously then we get to decide on how then do we capacitate our own employees in making sure that they learn the best on fighting that particular crime. And in doing that, we're not only identifying a specific country. We identify a couple of countries. That's why the objective is not to let the SDS be trained by a foreign country. It's to have a capacity in-house. So when you go out there for training, ours is to learn what the training is all about, come back to the course content, and be able to develop our own curriculum in this regard. So that's basically the basic approach of how we the SDS goes about identifying this training. Honorable Chair, there was a question regarding side 1 and 2. I've already spoken about that. We send our members over to undergo the training, where they learn and they come back and they assist the development of the curriculum. The decision regarding, Chair, that you asked regarding the executive courses or training courses, you've made mention of some courses that the managers will have attended that perhaps the Chair will be not accredited. So in this case, the supervisor of an employee, in signing the performance agreement with the employee, there has to be an implication of a training or development programs that the executive employee needs to undergo. So in this case, it's quite a different thing. So that training requirement will then come over to our division, to HRD, in terms of arranging the provision of such a development program or training development to capacitate the employee.
Now that is focused at identifying different levels, including the senior management. The senior management that is reporting to the National Commission, for instance, will have their own development requirements that they will have to discuss with the National Commission. Now, the supervisor then will have to identify perhaps what are the programs that might be relevant also that the supervisor will want that employee to know or to be facilitated with. And that is had to be coordinated via the Division of Human Resource Development. Now, it's easy for either a national commissioner or any other lieutenant general or any provincial commissioner to decide that. I would want a program that is going to be presented to this category of employee on this level, be it executive development or any other level of training. But then the Division of Human Resource Development is the division that charges with responsibility to have experts in the field, to be able to evaluate the training program and be able to advise the management whether this training, particular training program, is it accredited or not. Now, the supervisor might not know, but the Division of Human Resource Development is the one that must advise. So if we fail to advise and the general say we want his subordinates to undergo a particular program, we only facilitate that program without advising whether this program is accredited or not. That means it's a failure from the division side. So these are some of the things that Jared is talking about that we have to discuss on, because we've encountered such problems that we have to play a role in the Division of Human Resource Development in terms of providing the necessary advice to the leadership of the organization, so we don't just send personnel to go and attend any other course that is not accredited. And it's not also in line with the objectives of, and priorities of the organization. And also not a must have for the employee. We wouldn't want just a nice to have for everyone to attend a particular program to improve their CV. We want the improvement of the operation that must come back and give empower the organization going forward. Chair, the issue of the cost that differs, the travel cost, the accommodation cost, the subsistence allowances, and the cost, the specific cost, it's all that is inclusive in determining the cost of the particular international training program. Obviously, like, if you want to go and attend a training program in Lesotho, for instance, the traveling cost to Lesotho would be less than when you travel to Zimbabwe, for instance, if you're coming from Free State, because you are closer to Lesotho than to Zimbabwe. So the cost, it has impact in terms of the total cost of all these training programs. So that's why they're going to differ. Some of them will be more expensive than the others, and depending on the bill of the land also to influence that. The issue of the general talking about the France method in terms of price management, this is not the only France that we are attending these training programs. We go to different countries. Like I said earlier, the whole objective of going to a particular country for a training program is not we want to train the rest of the SAPS to be able to execute or be able to be competent in such a program. You send one or two, so they learn something, they come back and give input into the curriculum development of a South African Police Service customized program. So we cannot adopt any country. We have to have our own. So we have to learn from different countries how they approach their own current situation. We come into South Africa, we take our situation in the country and develop a curriculum that is going to be tailor-made for South African Police Service. So we are not necessarily saying that we're going to be operating on the French model. It's just a learning and taking what you think we can use and deciding those that you feel is not important for. On slide 8, Chair, tell us the cause why it's so expensive, the training that was conducted in the UK and Sovereign. It's a simple aircraft, pilot. It's a pilot program. We have, I'm sure the Chair will know that there was a police jet that was bought a couple of years back, and the pilot, that jet is a Sovereign jet. And the service provider is the one that has to train the pilots to remain current on them. So it's mandatory that they need to undergo such refreshment training. Otherwise, if they don't, we might have incidents on the aircraft. Now, we don't want incidents on the aircraft because it's a very expensive machine, which is heavily utilized within the CPS for operational purposes. So therefore, we need the pilots to stay current. And that's not only on the aircraft service sovereign. We've got helicopters and different vessels that you have in organization. The majority of them are bought from overseas. So we have to send the members to undergo the military training. So that's basically the cost associated with that. It is military.
because of international training versus the financial constraints that we experience in the country. Like I said earlier, when we send members abroad, we're not going to send 100 members to a particular course. We're going to send one or two, so they learn something and come back and develop our own. So the whole purpose is that we need to cut down in terms of sending members to undergo training abroad. So that's the focus in terms of the cost containment that we want to implement within the organization. The slide 16, in terms of how does number relate to each other, so this is regarding the international training. If I were to go quickly to the slide 16. This is regarding the, no, it's not interesting, this one is the second part. What we see on slide 16 on the screen, it talks about the intake per year. So this, the first one, 2014, those will be enrolled in 2014. I'm going to allow, with your permission, Oran Bushay, Jarrah, and Timur, to give the details, some of the other questions regarding the criteria you tell us to enroll this employee. So I'll allow her to explain the criteria using on this. But 125 were enrolled in 2015. That means the beginning of the year, 125 of our employees that went this, they were enrolled for this program. Only 98 of those passed the first year. So which means some of them did not pass the training program. And from the 98, then they went over to the following year, to the second year of the program. Now the MOU for 200 was signed in 2013. So the first intake came in 2014. 125 was enrolled, 98 were successful in passing the first year of the Bachelor of Police degree, science degree, and in the second year, that 98 was enrolled for the second year. Not all of them again were successful in the following year. There were only 86 were successful. And the 86 that were successful in the second year, what you see on the screen, in 2015, the same approach also. You know, we then also going to find those that will have, out of their own, they have undergone the registration process at different universities. They will be undergoing the first day of their training program, second year of their training program, third year of their training program. So even those that will have maybe have the first year of their degree, they can apply to come to the second year of this program. So it, not, it doesn't mean that because they were not part of the first year, they cannot come in the second year, or they cannot come in on the third year. So at any stage when they, maybe they don't have financial means for them to undergo or to finish that degree out of their own, they can apply and they can be admitted. So they can come in, as you see the figure, can come in to add the numbers for the specific year of training program. So that's basically how the numbers are broken down in terms of this slide. I hope that one is clear, Chair. The next one, like I said, Sintimolo will speak about criteria on this. Honorable Chair, was a question about why we're enrolling trainees in the academy, in the SAPL Academy, whereas it's not yet accredited to the university. I said it when I presented at the beginning of my presentation, Director Parr. I said the PAR is being accredited as the center for UNISA. So it is an exam center for UNISA. So basically that's why they're using the facility to present training and also have exam center. It's just not accredited as a university of police training on its own. It sort of can be seen as a specialized type of a facility for UNISA. It's still working under the UNISA MF or accreditation status. Chair, there's no foreign assistance or financial assistance that you are receiving on this one. It is SAPS that is provided. On the slide that's on the screen currently, we indicated the budget that came from SAPS on some of the programs. So that's basically what the funding that came within the academy. It's from SAPS and that one from SAPS. There's no other foreign. The impact of international trips, we said on when we were speaking about the way forward in terms of our international trips that we need to do impact studies on these ones and see whether are we really getting a value for money on those and we are able to develop the training curriculum as expected. And the fatigue, the cost, why so expensive, if I got this, like six of the course associated with international training, check. The cost in majority normally is like six on most of the slides. Most of the cost that is in the program is not necessarily funded by the SFS. It is a specific, that's why when we say country, so that's the country that provides. The cost that we've seen associated with that will either be a donation from the particular country or the cost for our members that are traveling to get there. In majority of the cases, the country that presents a specific problem like this one which is here, they are paying for our members to go there. So the traveling cost. That's why you see the program, for instance, the one that was presented in South Africa in this regard, meant it was had in South Africa, there were no cost associated with it. That country came into South Africa and they facilitated the training program in the country. So but if they have to go abroad, they assist in terms of the traveling and the like. The slide 6 and 7 share where I'm explained this way, there is no cost involved. It's basically because the first slide 6 is the Chinese government and the second one is the USA, but slide 7. So they brought the trainers into the country to provide training. So there was no cost implications on this one. The MOU was signed in 2013 and it was signed by the Minister of Police then. The last one, Chair, the issue with regard to the content of all training courses. We didn't bring it with the content of e-course in trying to answer the question regarding the below sea level that was conducted. I can simply say, Chair, that it is one of the training programs that will focus on crime within sea. We've got a lot of Avalon poaching. We've got a lot of pirates sitting within the sea. So these type of training and meetings and seminars are directed towards finding solutions to counter such crime happening within the sea level. Because you know, when you talk about the abalone poaching, it does not happen on the surface of the water. They go deep underneath and in the middle of the night. So how then we fire to them? How do you arrest them? Do you wait for them on shore or do you go deep in there and deal with them? So these are experiences that we have to learn from other colleagues international of how they handle these things, and we can also share ours. So I think that's just about it, with your permission, this issue with regard to the criteria used for selection of the police members and maybe the staff crime issue. Thank you, Joe.
Yes, Chairperson. Honourable members, I just responding also to the question by Honourable Mulabati when there was a question around why one person was trained on cyber. Perhaps it's proper that I also explain that due to the priorities within the search and HRD that has on terms of the broad organization, the DCI also sets aside funds for specialized training within the environment. So based on that, we expose our members on different specialized training within the DCI, and we would have, on cybercrime, we had set a budget of 2.6 million that we had using local-based service providers to train members within the DCI. Not only the specialized capacity of cybercrime investigators, but the plan is to train all investigators in the DCI and expose them to basic cybercrime investigation, because they are the first people who initiate investigations. So just to broaden the scope and experience and skills. So within this financial year, the DPCI has set aside a budget to expose members within the environment on cybercrime. So the concern raised probably was to allay that concern that we also had set aside a budget where we had sourced training for cybercrime in the environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Members of the House, I'm first going to respond to the issue of the curriculum, as well as address the issue of the way forward, and then address the selection criteria.
Chairperson, currently the approach is that we are using the UNISA approved curriculum of the Bachelor of Arts in Police Science, with special focus in law. And the subjects are as follows. Learners at PAL are taught English. They are also taught ethical information and protection technologies. They are taught investigative principles for policing 1A, as well as investigative principles for policing 1B. They are taught crime prevention for policing 1A, as well as crime prevention for policing 1B. Those are compulsory modules that they are taught. But further, they have electives in Code 1, which cover the following streams: the management stream, the public administration stream, the law stream, as well as the student criminology. That is now the first year. Second year, the same principle also applies, but in second year, the subject of research in social science is added as also compulsory, and again, they have broadened the management, so the elective stream. For example, where initially they would have had two modules, now they can choose from four modules. I can give an example on the management stream. For example, they are actually allowed to choose from human resource management, supply chain, public relations, and general management. When they move over to third year, I'm going to speak because second year is almost similar to the first year. In the third year, they are now taught and measured investigative principles for policing 3A, as well as investigative principles for policing 3B, crime prevention principles 3A, as well as crime prevention principles 3B. And they are also taught research methodologies specifically focusing on criminal justice. They also have, again, the five streams of electives that they can choose five subjects. The way forward is that at the SAP, we are currently reviewing the curriculum to speak to police-specific competencies. For example, with an option to specialize. For example, members will be able to do cybercrime, members will be able to do forensic science, or they can even do forensic psychology. And I think in our discussion, we also spoke about the issue of sociology, where basically we are talking community engagement. Members have to understand the communities in which they are policing, whether geographically, and also the issue of culture, because we are policing under the democracy. So members have to operate with what issues affect members and what is the impact on policing. So that is now our media long term plan curriculum review. In terms of the selection criteria, it is twofold. We have got the UNISA specific requirements, and also we have got the staff requirements. The UNISA requirements are basically what we all know. The members have to be in possession of the certificate, which is endorsed, which means, I think, according to my hand, it is your matric exemption. But also members who actually are over 23 and have passed at least four subjects with a symbol of E, and they meet the Rubik scale criteria, are able to be given endorsement and are able to register. In terms of the SAP requirements, the SAP requirements talk to the SAP specific requirements. These have to be members who are 20 years and not more than 38, so which means that is now the age group. And they should have been in SAP for at least three continuous non-working years, and that excludes probation and reserve service, and they must have a clean record, which means no criminal convictions or records or pending departmental cases, and they must be able to read, write, and speak English. They must be physically fit. They also go through a psychometric evaluation. They also go through a psychoprofiling screening, and also they have to be of sound and good character, hence we have a grooming camp before they can be accepted. They also have to be computer literate. So those will be sub-specific requirements in terms of accepting them into the Bachelor of Arts in Police Science. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. In terms of whether have we begun to see the impact
In some areas, yes, in some we still assess. I'll give an example in terms of crowd management. We have been posting the fees last fall protest. I must say it was bad. The members were incited, they were poked, so many things happened. Irrespective of that, we still managed to police, and there were no incidents of the so-called brutality which were reported. We will be coming back also, we'll further do evaluation, and we'll be coming back given an opportunity. We will be able to give an indication as to whether indeed we are seeing an impact emanating from the different programs. But also, being one of the beneficiaries of our programs, of the concept of having a UNIRA training students, I can attest that in the long run, we will be able to see professional members emanating from the education that they will have received from UNIRA, and we will encourage members, continue to encourage them to enter for the study. Thank you, Chair.
Right. Members, if there's anything additional, you must indicate after that we'll break with me. I just have one or two issues. I think from the committee side, we welcome the fact that you're going to review the approach to the police university. Because currently, your recruitment model is saying only non-mission officers. Constable to warrant officer. And the question is, if you read for the NDP, and you look at my management, isn't there also a place to go beyond that? I also want to know about the governance model currently within SAPS to deal with all and maybe other trading facilities. There was in the past some problems here and there in terms of reporting and so on that the committee is aware of. I just want to know who actually in SAPS from the DMCs govern that space, and also from an academic assessment side. Is there a board, a joint board between yourself and UNISA? What is the governance arrangements? Colleagues, any other thing else? That's the question. General Gwena and your team.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the governance module, you indicated that, Chair, we said we will be meeting. If I were to present the agenda, amongst other things, it's the issue of governance. Which we'll be talking to. I will request General Mkhwanazi to talk to the issue of the board as to whether there is a board. He says there's a board entirely.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, when the project was started after the MU, there was agreements in terms of the assessment of the progress in terms of this partnership. So hence, it is a board that meets and review the progress against the project that was developed within SAPS and PAPA. The responsibility was given to the Deputy National Commissioner of Corporate Services in the old structure. So now that we've got the revised structure in the organization, we was human resource development is the one that's responsible for it, therefore it makes the Deputy National Commissioner human resource management the Deputy National Commissioner accountable for any training provision at certain organization. So with here change the constitution that I have for the board between the SAPS and UNISA. Thank you.
Right, anything else? I think we want to thank SAPS for the report. I think it's a work in progress. I think during the budget hearings, we will have to learn more about the review, as well as the assessment and the review of all senior management programs. We welcome the fact that there is a review underway, because the concern in the past is ad hoc. It's not really structured to the philosophy. We understood the question of the, we understood the explanation of the supervisor's role and so on, but I think what is critical, there must be broad philosophical swing in terms of dealing with the professionalization of SAPS, and it must start at a different level. So we welcome the fact that there will be a review, and the committee will be very interested to look at that, because we need to ensure that our commanders of the future are prepared for all the matters that they will have to deal with. We're going to break now for 10 minutes. After that, we're going to take the two presentations from the two unions. then we're going to take iPad, and then we're going to have the Mr. Guru's Gravity in Israel. Thank you very much. Keep for 10 minutes.
It's up to you, but I don't mind.
What kind of discussion and what's happening?
Because I mean, this should be the format now. So there's another presentation and discussion.
Can I just ask for what one of my notions that obviously like coming with going on with the slides, that wasn't just in discussion. How much to go back and look at the slides and to...
No, that's just for my own reason, so I can go back and look at the
slides.
Okay, thank you. But you really won't make it. The results won't make a reference to slide numbers.
Okay. So you really only... the discussion part that was really much.
Yeah.
So, like, so it's the presentation
for your view. Yeah, okay. So I'll go back and I'll look at the international, I'll put the focus in there, and then, there's a whole lot that I can still see. So I would say the international trading done in a number of countries, for example, and a few examples of the courses, because we put the presentation on a site, so so it's basically just a summary of...
So you use like a special for the discussion part?
Yeah.
Okay.
So even when I'm going back and I'm listening to my recording, I don't listen to the presentation. So I go back and listen to all the discussion again, because I'm very... You know, after all these years, I'm very pedantic about making sure that I have everything as accurately as I could, and that I try not to paraphrase what people say as not necessary, but I write as safe for me as I can. Because I've had incidents recently of members who said that some of our monitors have stuff and that's not what they mean.
I'm just checking up about the discussion part. So the new change in it is like happy to see
I'll put that all in. And then also with the document, so I just think the emphasis is to try your best to get the document so quickly.
Yeah.
And if you really can't get it, that would be your...
Yeah. The document here would be for the class.
I mean, it's not just for our own records and put the document up, but for yours.
Yeah.
So there's been times where applicants are just putting this document and I've actually listened to our goals and
try and transcribe what you see.
Thank you.
I'm Right, thank you, honorable members. Thank you very much. I think thanks for coming back after the short tea break. We're going to continue. I'm going to give Sapu 10 minutes as well as Pokru. Who's ready? Who will go first? Sapu, over to you.
Let me first start by saying our formal presentation when we left this morning, we did not receive it from the office because there were some other things which they were trying to compile. However, they gave us this informal one. The formal one will follow in due course.
That is unacceptable. We must have the documents on time so that we go through them and come into the meetings being ready. Thanks.
That's just maybe for future use as well. We need it done. But it's less to the oral presentation. You can do it, thank you.
Yes, Chairperson, the thing is that we received the information yesterday. That's why we could not formally capture everything in time. Thank you very much. It's an honor and a privilege to be associated with such a great initiative. We as SABU would like to applaud the SAPS for the initiative of taking police officers serious. Thanks for teaming up with UNISA in ensuring that policing is taken back to its basics by professionalizing policing. We can't wait as a union to see the full implementation of the NDP because it's part of the total professionalization of policing in South Africa. SAPU would like to make an appeal that this program benefits our junior members at station level as they are the ones on ground and day-to-day basis. SAPU is looking forward to seeing PAL Academy being fully accredited with the assistance of UNISA, as mentioned by staff. We are also appealing that POP be fully equipped in all respect, more especially when it comes to their crash courses each and every time when they conduct their duties. As we have said that we are really into this initiative as a SAPU, and this will benefit our members a lot. In short, Chairperson, this will be our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, SAPU, for that. So we will again give an opportunity to book through.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members, and everybody available. Well, within the shortest period ever, we invited, we tried to put something together. So it wasn't that there was not much time for the time, let's say. I say once again, we are pleased to be part of this important platform of addressing critical matters for the benefit of the members and the society, South African society at large. We are well aware that today's meeting is an evaluation of training programs offered in PAL at the brief offered. Other than focusing on the brief channels, we will raise obviously other couple of issues which we deem of importance within the service. Let me commence by highlighting our appreciation of the established partnership between the South African, I mean, University of South Africa and the Academy of the South African Police, which is PAL. We are hopeful that this partnership, if effectively managed, will produce an improved caliber of police professionals with enhanced knowledge and skills to better South Africa with a diligent commitment and, of course, a great sense of professionalism. We believe that the risking of the SAS members is essential, as this will address the long-standing concerns of inadequate training in certain divisions, such as policing order or public order policing. We applaud the idea of realizing a need to upgrade the level of education for men and women in blue, who are mostly in possession of grade 12 as their highest qualifications. These members will now pride themselves as they are given a life-changing opportunity of acquiring a bachelor's degree, the most recent weapon which will certainly transform South Africa into, or add into that process of a crime-free country. We are confident that this institution will lead impact positively towards achievements of the goal of transforming the South African police service into a professional service as stipulated in the National Development Plan. We are also certain that this initiative will also play a major role in rebuilding good relations between police management, police and the community, as a transformed staff will be enhanced with integrity and a sense of respect. We further embrace the slogan that we saw that which says, through these doors shall come men and women who will serve the country with pride, dignity and professionalism. We are undoubtedly looking forward to this new breed to be enhanced in a better approach. However, we have a few concerns in terms of operations of the academy, more specifically, or more especially with regard to the disciplinary process. We take into cognizance the fact that one of the academy's objectives is to help instill discipline, police culture and patriotism among the members of the service. Nonetheless, we condemn the current practice of disciplining the students with specific reference to the case in November whereby members were expelled without proper procedures being followed as entailed in the well-documented regulations in relation to discipline within the police. COPU does not promote in any way whatsoever ill discipline among its members, but of course we do believe to adherence to proper rules and procedures when dealing with disciplinary processes. We therefore urge the leadership of the staff and the management of the academy to follow proper disciplinary procedures and not treat members unfairly by intimidating, humiliating or victimizing them when they contravene certain rules or guidelines. We call upon the management to promote sound relations within the institution and establish proper channels of resolving grievances and moreover, allow labor activities and procedures to take place as regulated. Compliance with all signed agreements within the Safety and Security Sectoral Bargaining Council, at the level of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Councils, and other regulations is also key in proper administration at this institution. We have also noted a challenge of inadequate personnel at the institution and therefore submit that there should be prioritization in filling of these vacant positions with qualified employees to ensure that the programs run effectively at all times. While still on the issue of training, it's crucial to also indicate that we were shocked when the student constables were deployed to work at various malls during the practice season, apparently with the aim of increasing police visibility. We regard police visibility as one of the most important factors of minimizing criminal activities. However, we are not in favor of objecting to the fact that the staff exposed the lives of the students of Stavros instead of properly capacitating well-experienced members with relevant armaments to effectively execute this task, especially during these important or crucial times. In an attempt to stay in this embarrassing situation, we engaged the staff management, but safely we are met with a level of arrogance and proceeded with the last proceedings with the illegal actions of exposing the unqualified students into the streets. clear that while the management pretends to be sympathizing with the alarming killings of police officers, which is alcohol anyway, the actions prove the condition that they deliberately opposed the experienced students to hard-hearted criminals. There was a failure to consider that these students were in the theory phase, meaning that they were not sufficiently trained, and so therefore ill-equipped. This irrational action is tantamount to suicide, because we should not say thank you because the criminals were also on holiday. They did not do what they normally do, that which is to terrorize the police officers. So there was no incident. But you should not take that as a fact of saying this was a rational action. Moreover, the management deliberately provided this student with an incomplete memorandum of understanding with the exclusion of points or rows 12 and 11. We are now of the understanding that the set expected the clauses that were omitted. Apparently condone this action of exposing members to these risky conditions. We therefore call upon staff to amend this memorandum to the proper the processes that are there, which is the data platform, to resolve this kind of issues. Another critical matter of great concern is the latest restructuring, as we hear in the presentation here, that there is a new so-called structure. We want to categorically put it on record that such contravenes the processes which are laid down, which require proper and effective consultation or meaningful consultation prior to implementation of any changes relating to structures or restructuring and changes of organization of the web. We have previously presented or made some submissions or implications of this contradictory top heavy structure within the staffs, which among others result in unnecessary duplication of functions, fruitless expenditure and paralysis of efficient police operations at the grassroots. Now let's be quite frank, Chairperson. We will not let this go, no matter what it takes to us. We would not like to see honestly the instability that is caused by the management, and we hope that there will be stability as the processes evolve and as we move on to try and resolve these kind of issues. Now we are concerned as well with the development that we have witnessed. A covert agreement that was entered into between the Acting National Commissioner and his management and an organization which is called Solidarity, which does not have organizational rights within South African Police Service, taking to the promotion of members which relates to the litigation that has enhanced the Solidarity on a transformation agenda within such particularly affirmative fashion. We are saying this is a travesty of justice. When mechanisms are put in place to correct the brutal injustices previously meted upon the majority of South Africans, then further settlements are entered into with unrecognized Mickey Mouse organizations to fund such important and progressive efforts. We know what is the agenda of solidarity within the public service. And now if poverty settlements are entered into, as we have witnessed, this is a cause for serious concern. It's a serious cause for concern. In conclusion, I would like to applaud all men and women in there for their hard work and dedication in ensuring that our country and its citizenry are safe at all times. We would rather like to encourage these dedicated members to continue being professional, uphold the constitution, and show respect for human rights at all times. I thank you, Chair.
Right, thank you for the unions for the input. We know that. Is there any members who wants to give input? Honourable Lebatsi, and then Honourable Dezen, and then Honourable Lebatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me thank Hapu for their wonderful introduction and in closing thanks for the work well done.
so far? To conclude, my question follows. Why do you think staff management is pretending to supervise the police killings? My next one is, we as this committee already see the fruits of this restructuring from the reports we receive, and we are very excited. Thank you.
Thank you, Bailey.
Thanks very much, Chair. And I think it's no secret that the two big issues in a concrete presentation have been a bone of major contention, both the restructuring and the deployments of the students and constables over the 50 season operations. So we saw those issues be covered in the media. I am curious, actually, just to satisfy my own understanding, also clarify my own understanding, because when I first heard around mid-December about the inclusion of the students, cadets, in the fifth season operations, I was a little concerned as to how their practical lack of experience might, you know, jeopardize them being part of the operations. But at the same time, I didn't want to sort of make arrogant assumptions that, you know, maybe this is part of actually gaining that experience in the course of learning. So I would very much like to just hear an explanation, clarification, rationale from the SETS as to how that is structured, in including the students. It's when they go out in the field, especially at a sort of peak season like the fifth season, and in particular what measures are in place to mitigate the risk to them. You know, are they placed in very specific low risk environments? Do they have clear protocols of what to follow, like, you know, get lead to experienced officers to be, you know, first time responders and that sort of thing? Because I think more of a balancing act between the benefits of operational practical experience for them, but at the same time being very aware of the risk that they're in because they don't have that experience yet, and therefore they need to mitigate those. So just to put my mind at risk that each year that this is done, as much as possible has been done to play that balancing act. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Well, you're nice. You're the host.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't have a question as such, but I would like to perhaps just make a couple of comments. It's very clear to me that there are legitimate concerns from BOPCO's side. I'm very uncomfortable, however, by the relationship it has taken with police management, or at least the tone and the content of it. As Honourable Molivasi said, we've seen today incredible improvements in the policing service as a result of the restructuring, something that makes it streamlined, makes it effective, makes it efficient, something that I think benefits everyone at the end of the day, not only the police but also the public. And I'd like to believe that the public interest, as mandated by the Constitution, is the primary concern of the police service. Secondly, it's difficult for me to, listening to this, to imagine that the engagement with police management takes place in good faith. There are accusations made without necessarily substantiation about what the police management intend, what they do, etc. And yet there's no indication that there's a sincere attempt at addressing this. And finally, I also believe it's in the best interest of the service and of experienced members and members who have been in the service to provide students with an opportunity to receive on-the-job training. And if you really, really think about it, it makes your job as an experienced police service officer easier. Because there are more hands and feet on the ground that can assist and that render the service that the public deserves. So, broadly, Chairperson, I don't know whether this situation can be resolved. That's for the police management to do. But it's something that makes me very uncomfortable having to listen to.
Yeah, maybe before they would give a response to Hope as well as the police management, remember, Carlos, we had the presentation last year from the National Commissioner, going in broad terms, agreed with the approach.
But we also added, in action this year, we also asked for the organogram, and those issues will be looked at during the budget hearings. We already agreed upon that. So I don't want to stifle the debate. It's important when we focusing on training, but during the budget debate, of course, we're going to revisit those issues. Not to, underscore issues. We'll give an opportunity to sample with anything from this side, then Popper, and then to the general, Nadenia, and then we'll go to Mr. Hamayani. Sample anything from this side.
There's nothing from our side, just thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Well, our assertion that this little is a bit to the issue of police-killing. I mean, if the seriousness on the police-killing material is really the real priority and the main focus, the issue, remember they were talking about this when we referred to the deployment of students. Now, the equipped students who are taken to various circumstances or environments and so-called proper training, they are not equipped, fully equipped. We are offering them. We are offering them.
Sorry, see, I'm going to pass you that just a moment.
What do you want to see the police management doing to show you that they are sympathizing with the police case? Thank you.
You can
do it, sir. Thank you. Chair, I'm not sure whether I'm expected to reply in a particular fashion.
No,
respond in a particular fashion, or I must give a response, as I've been trained. And I think we have raised that as a concern, as a serious concern that we are opening up the students. In fact, they are being put there to be butchered by the criminals because they will not be in a position to deal with the situation, to handle the criminals like as the well-trained officers will do, or those who have completed their training. Now, in that environment, obviously, or in that kind of a situation, is it really paying attention or trying to minimize the issue of police killing? To our understanding, is a big no in that regard. Now, the issue of restructuring, we are well aware, Chair, that you have given it a lot, sometimes as you have applied last year and so on. However, there are processes laid down that there should be proper and meaningful consultation. Only two meetings happened and no consultation. The first meeting was a question of clarity, what is this about, what does it entail. The second meeting, it was supposed to give the clarity on those asked questions, and nothing happened. Then it was concluded that the process is concluded and management is moving ahead, and indeed it's moving ahead with the portfolio committee. And with the portfolio committee having given it a nod does not make it correct that it was within the outcome of the processes that are laid down. And if I say it's fine, management is moving ahead as the UI instruction offers what options that we are doing. Our relationship or negotiations, which are to be, I'm not sure right to refer to us as the negotiations are not in good faith. We approach the negotiations all the time in good faith, and we don't hide anything, as is the case when issues are hidden from us, and we openly work with surprises, just like as we witnessed with the issue of the restructuring, when they were introduced and implemented immediately, even before there is a formal agreement. There are no unsubstantiated accusations that we levelled. I'm not sure which ones, but it is the issue about students which were dismissed at the college. It is a fact, without following proper process. That is a fact. I'm not sure if there's anyone who disputes that. now here, because they're still out, there are still processes underway to deal with that aspect. Thank you.
No, I see other hands well, and I said we agreed that during the budget process we're going to look at the issues, in terms of the detail of the restructuring and the financial implications, we agreed upon that. If it's really serious, and then nobody on
that. Sir, I just want to add, as good as you're talking about, if you had the point, it is part of the system. There were different types of guns. That's a dangerous situation. We have guns. That is a serious matter compared to killings in the shopping malls by criminals who are also to have a Christmas. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Honorable Leonard, you still want to come in?
Chairperson, when I raised the issue of what I was specifically referring to was the claim that the SAS management pretends. For me, that is a very dangerous claim to make. But also, in terms of my understanding on the briefing from the Acting National Police Commission last week was that they were not deployed to high-risk, heavily violent areas. They were deployed to shopping malls, and yes, they become a target with the festive season and they do this through the rest of the year. But as we saw during the FIFA World Cup, having police officers on the ground minimizes the opportunity for crime, and the more you have men in blue, you reduce the risk for attack. Or for crime. So I'm trying to understand the rationale for this, and I'd like to specifically have a base in fact. Where were any students under fire? When there were police killings, as there were over the festive season, were they in the shopping malls? I know of one that happened in his house or at his house. So I'm finding it difficult to see the kind of evidence to back up the claim.
Maybe just indicate, Honourable Minister, remember next week is our seminar on risk factors, dealing with the issue of police killings as well. So I think let's spot those issues. I appreciate the robust, and frankly, that's where why the portfolio committee is here, to hear different voices, so that we ensure that SAS move forward correctly. So we welcome the frank and the robust interaction. It's fine. We ask just that the DNC to react, and then we'll go to the next presenter.
Thank you very much, sir. Chair, let me begin by applauding the members of SAS again for having delivered a FIFA 50 season, of which one can proudly say that we never had any incident of students attacked or anyone being shot at. It was safe for the communities, and even members who were deployed were all safe. It is our commitment, Chair, to continue working with our social partners, and in doing so, we ensure that we abide by our agreements and MOUs that regulate us. The issue of police killing remains very sore. Hence, we will not rest until we win. And we are appealing to our social partners to work together with us, the same as we apply to community members, to say, it is our sons, it is our brothers that are killing the police. And together, let us join hands and fight against police killings. We have strategies in place which we have continuously indicated that they are not meant for sharing with the public. Therefore, what I'm saying is that the SAPS is committed towards fighting the police killings. And we will be engaging, as indicated by the on our own, we will never win. We will be engaging, and we are inviting our social partners to join in. The issue of disciplinary issues raised by our social partner group, we are in the process. Just last week, one had to find out from the custodians of discipline the status in terms of implementing the revised disciplinary code, which we compiled together with our social partners. We will be implementing the revised disciplinary code, and we will be working together towards ensuring that it works for our members and for the organization. In terms of members who are allegedly have been expelled without the necessary process, I will be
engaging with our partners, and I am inviting them to give us specifics so that together we look into the matter. Lastly, the safeguarding of communities and South Africans is above us. Therefore, we are appealing to the social partners to join hands with us in ensuring that the South Africans are and feel safe. Let's make it easier for our members to be able to deliver their work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General. Well, I think from the portfolio committee side again, I think maybe appeal on all social partners and management. Let's do walk this somehow. Let's, if you can't reach each other halfway, let's try and talk to each other. That's critical. At the end of the day, it's essential that the South African Police Service is doing its job effectively, supported by the community, and that's what we want. We want safe communities, and the role of the SAPS members and management is critical in achieving that. Thank you. Mr. Khamuliani, Acting ED, can you please address us on the matter of your training program? General, was there any from your side?
Thank you, Chair. General Mkhwanazi wanted to explain some issues around the deployment of those trains.
Welcome. Right, let's take that first. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members. I would want to talk to
sorry, General. I just got the number on ruler.
Sorry. Yes, sorry, I was not here. I've got two questions to Pop, but the other one I heard General Gwenyari answered it for the proper disciplinary procedure. She has answered it. The one that I want to know, I was to ask the Pope, is that I want to know the relationship between the Pope and the acting national commissioner. Which is there a stability or what in their relationship?
Well, we'll give an opportunity, but I think, you know, from the chairperson's perspective, we said, please, let's move forward. Let's ensure that the relationship between the various offices is strengthened. There must be more communication. I think we don't need unnecessary tension that can be avoided by having, you know, talks on a regular basis. But of course, the Secretary General is welcome if he wants to come in.
Well, the relationship between ourselves and SAPS, obviously it's not regarding individuals. It is a well outlined relationship as how do we deal with the, how do we deal and interact with issues. So it all depends obviously as well as the issues on the table as we deal with them. We've raised critical issues, some were presented here. And of course, it will, as we go along, it will see as to where things take us to. And well, we'll operate as we do operate ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much. General Makunazi, welcome.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Chair, regarding the deployment of trainees during the festive season in 2015 December, perhaps I should start by explaining, in short, the basic police development program, Chair, that is divided into two categories. One of the categories is academy phase, which is a 10-month with the academy. And the second one is the field training phase, which is a 12-month on the field. They are the trainees. And then last one is an integrated assessment, which is a 2-month within the academy. So this is just a training program which has been in existence in this organization in the past year or two. So it doesn't start now that the trainees go to the fields. It's been happening all along. It's just strange that it's only December 5th to challenge. Today, we have the MEU, as the ATTS and the UNOS, we spoke to the trainees. And the MOUs basically talks about the giving authority of permission to the UNOS to recruit the trainees. On one side, on the other side, it affords them an opportunity to interact with the trainees. And then police has a memorandum of agreement which is signed between the police management and the trainee specifically. And that one is where discipline management for the trainee is applied. And that MOU is signed between the trainee and police management, which is applied during the training program. And on the 15th of December, Chair, before you explain, is that as police management, we one thing that I like that our partner Boko explained when they were talking on page 3 of the article, paragraph 2, line 3, when they are referring to discipline, they need to enforce within our training academies. We therefore cannot allow a situation that a trainee who is not a police officer is going to manage the APS through the email, through an SMS. And it happened in the instance of December that one of the trainees at Fort Sovereign Academy did that. And we've got proof that there was investigation conducted and the memorandum of agreement between the SAPS and the trainee has been terminated because this matter was taken. Where a trainee blames everyone, blames the union and blames the management, and find ourselves having to be questioning our instructions to a given by a trainee. And this is one of the examples that we want to emphasize on the discipline and the culture in the organization that we need to continue working on. The experts with regard to the training and the police, arrive with police, it does not address anybody else. Within the organization or outside the organization. If you're not a police person responsible for human resource development, you cannot call yourself an expert in training. Now, based on that, we therefore cannot be challenged by anybody who does not necessarily know what goes into the training program, not unless they sit down with us and get to understand what goes into the training program for anybody to challenge any deployment whatsoever, as well as the training methodology and the deployment methodology of SAPS. It does not necessarily mean if you don't have a firearm as a police officer like myself today, I cannot enforce law when I walk outside. That's a simple approach that SAPS we have. We're not necessarily charged by the firearm to be able to execute police work. So in our training program, we focus on different categories. One of them is fitness for the police officer. In that fitness, we teach a police officer to be able to subdue a suspect and armed combat without using firearm. We train them. Throughout the whole 10 months of them training, we train them. Of which, in December last year, they undergone the 10 months of training. The drill, they know instill the culture, the discipline, and protocols that needs to be adhered to within this organization. The firearm competence, there are three different types of firearms that we teach. And we do not teach them in month number 10, when the trainees are coming. We teach them from the time, from the day they arrive. We teach them on handguns, and they need to be competent on the handgun. And we move over there to a shotgun. They need to be competent on the shotgun. We move from shotgun to a rifle. They need to be competent on the rifle. So these are the three types of firearms they need to be trained. And the competence is in different stages of this basic training or the academy phase of their training program. Now, on top of that, we then have the law, criminal law, where they need to understand what the laws that are applicable, that they will have to go and enforce out there as trainees, as part of their training program, as police officers when they are permanent members. And lastly, then they get to learn on administrating relevant registers, starting from the pocketbook, the do's and the don'ts of a pocketbook, and going all the way to a document. They must attend all those registers if we utilize the organization. So when the person is already trained as a full-fledged police officer, it does not give a right for that person to think, that's it, I can then become a police officer for life because I've done this training and it ends there. There's maintenance that needs to be conducted. And as management, we are reviewing that process because we have some of the employees that would be qualified if we check a pilot for instance, which you spoke about earlier. You qualify as a pilot. You do maintenance. If you fail that maintenance, you cannot fly. You're not allowed to fly. So the employment, your employment condition within that environment might be reviewed. So in the SAPS, we're going to have a similar approach. That when we talk about the number of police officers that have an organization, they are all competent police officers. They maintain their skill that they're supposed to maintain, such as some competent. If the law says you need to maintain your shooting skill, you ought to do that. The failure of which might cause the management to review your employment conditions within the organization. So, of course, the public of South Africa, they expect a fully qualified and a competent police officer to be healthy. So I felt that I must just explain this process here so that whatever the bad publicity might have been there in December, that it's made clear that police management will not deploy anybody to the street who is not competent to be able to serve the community. So obviously the different phases of development stages that we will undertake. So that's basically in short they wanted to put across. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We go over to Mr. Khamanyane from IPED, and then Mr. David Bruce. Mr. Khamanyane, can you please proceed?
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members, again. Our presentation at IPED is the briefing on the training of IPED investigators for 2015-16. The presentation outline, it has the purpose, the introduction, the detailed report on training plan for investigators for 2015-16. Then we have the implementation of the leadership program for 2015-16, then the report on training of investigators since 2012-13 during the inception of the IPH annual patterns that is an extra day, then variety of courses attended by NC staff, challenges and corrective measures. The purpose there is to brief the Portfolio Committee on the training of investigators in the IPH for 2015-16 financial year. And some of the issues that we have covered them last week as and when in Parliament as far as training is concerned, as and when we're dealing with the BRRR report, because it also covers the program, the progress that we have done as decades in respect of training. The introduction, the next slide. I think at the background there, it has 163 investigators nationally, out of 414 staff members nationally. So we don't have lots of investigators as I pitch. The directorate is mandated by Skills Development Act of 2003 as well as the Human Resource Development and the Workplace Skills Plan among the pieces of legislation and plans to upskill and capacitate its investigators. And as such, the directorate's training plan for 2015-16 was developed for implementation in the year under review. However, due to budgetary constraints, the training plan for the period under review was reprioritized in July 2015, and priority was given to critical skills, such as in the area of investigations. You go to your next slide there. The Directorate Investigator Recruitment Drive aims to ensure that we recruit investigators who already have a basic detective course and crime resolving. We don't have a choice in respect of that up until we groom our own investigators as IPED. And but given the challenges that we are facing as far as our resources are concerned, we are forced by the circumstances to make sure that we get ready-made investigators in the form of those with the basic detective and resolving of crime office. The budgetary implications of the reprioritized training plan for the year under review, it amounted to 1.2 million. And we engaged with the University of Pretoria to train our investigators, 28 investigators on systemic corruption. And it was at an estimated cost of first paid application 434. That's constituting 34% of the reprioritized budgets. But just when we received the quotations and the training plan, the modules that are going to be covered there, we had to put that one on hold, and we are still engaging the University of Pretoria in respect of the content that has to come in. as far as this particular module is concerned, because what was contained there, it was more on your interviewing and presentation skills, and it was just irrelevant to this particular topic of system corruption. But coupled with that, we've got seven SMS members who have underwent EDP. In actual fact, for the period under review, they are still continuing with that. It suggests they are left with three. They will be completing it before the end of the financial year. And that particular EDP, Executive Development Program, is accredited because it is offered by the Northwest University as well as your VAL, University of Technology. Some of the SMS members, they have already benefited in respect of that particular accredited training, including myself, because immediately when you complete that together with the additional four elective modules, then you can just register your dissertation for your Master's in Public Admin. So it gives you all the credits to just complete at the end of the training itself, the your Master's in Public Administration. And going to the next slide, a total of 20 investigators have been sent to PAL. We have engaged subs. It has started for a very long time, this particular partnership. They will send our investigators, normally your principal investigators who are on the supervisor level, as well as our senior investigators to do the detective commander's leadership program at their PAL. And it is for the 2015-16 financial year. And further training to one investigator has been provided in the area of crime resolving. As we are talking now, one of our investigators is at Hamskraal doing that particular basic resolve of crime. This is in addition to a total of 51 senior and principal investigators, as well as our investigators who are trained in the crime resolving, and they ended up completing their national diploma in policing, which was offered by SAPSITA through AGL, and it is accredited level of training at a total budget expenditure of 570 since 2012. And we have attached the Annexure B in effect of that. And furthermore, based on the implementation of the directorate's other scheme, a total of four investigators are currently studying towards the LLB, and they have started most of them from 2012 to 2013 financial year. And one of them, the PI from Western Cape, has completed this LLB last year, December, and we have one from Free State, also principal investigator, who is going to complete his LLB at the end of this financial year. And one deputy director of investigations, who is on middle management, has attended an advanced management development program offered by the National School of Governance. In terms of what we presented last, with regards to the whole staff of IP, as far as the training plan is concerned, we have started very late with regards to that particular training plan, in the sense that NSG, National School of Governance, they didn't want to move and assist us with regards to training of our staff members up until we have signed off on our Memorandum of Understanding. And that particular MOU was signed off by myself and the DG during December, November last year. So it is only then that we have started to make sure that we capacitate our investigators through the NSC. I'll hand over to Mr. Tokoro to take us through the remainder of the presentation. Thank you.
Maybe in terms of the detailed analysis of the various staff levels, that's really not necessary. We take note of that.
I think we can move to the challenges, corrective measures as well as, yeah. Because we take note of the causes and the members involved, and those people are our feet, we take note of that.
Okay, I will give the information that is contained there, then I will zoom into the challenges and the corrective measures as instructed by the chairperson. The last three slides. The directorate acknowledges slow progress on training of investigators, but some of the reasons for that kind of progress include budgetary constraints and inability of training institutions to customize our training according to the IT needs. We have also requested the APCOF through SAFITA to assist us with regards to this particular issue. And I'm having a meeting this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon with the director of APCOF. And corrective measures in response to the above, it will be the submissions of the IP's training needs to SAFITA for funding considerations. We had our first meeting with SAFITA's administrator on the 27th of January, where we have started with engagement, but our engagement started last year, where she has requested us to come on board and engaging with academic institutions such as the University of South Africa and the Institute of Health to customize the investigator training to suit our needs. There was a process that was underway, spearheaded by Dr. Soko, who was heading the investigations component at the office, who even wants to resuscitate that particular process. The engagements with the FBI, National Academy on Accreditation of the training manual that was developed by IPIT, and we do have investigators who are trained as trainers on that particular training manual, and considerations of subs training proposals in various investigations areas, such as the firearm training, statement taking, human rights and policy evidence management, to mention just a few. And I think that's a person. That's that from IP's side. If there are questions, then we'll be able to respond to those particular questions. Thanks very much.
Thank you. I think you will also take note of the annexes, very detailed. We welcome it, and of course, we will ask the researchers also to look at that. We will go to questions, but I first want to have Mr. David Poos' his input as well. And then we will go to questions for both. You're welcome.
Thank you. Just did my presentation.
Yeah,
the presentation on the laptop, but
there's no way I can shift the laptop.
Well, members, as I've indicated this morning, it's a continuation of our interaction last week. And also, Mr. Bruce has been appointed on the panel of experts by the minister, in terms of looking at the issues flowing from Parliament in terms of public order policing. So part of the discussion is also to get that input and also prepare the committee for further engagements during the year. Welcome to you.
Good afternoon, members of the Portfolio Committee and members of the SAPS and unions and anyone else who's present, and thank you for inviting me to do this presentation. Just to very briefly introduce myself, I'm the subject who's been working in this field for 20 years, and 15 of those years were at the
Center for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation. And in many ways, the central issue that I've taken an interest in has been questions to do with use of force by police and control of the use of force. And so I've taken a lot of interest related to that in the whole Americana incident. So as Mr. Birkman said, my presentation follows from the presentation by the ITID last week, where the ITID was talking about the progress that it had been making its criminal investigations against the police. And so I'm talking about other issues relevant to the police that are emerged from Marikana. And they're relevant to questions about professionalizing police, and is you know, part of what I focus on, other questions about public order policing. And so this, I'm going to talk in a bit of detail about questions to do with the disciplinary obligations of SAPS, following from the incident on the 16th of August 2012 at Marikana. But just to make note of the fact, as is often emphasized, that there were a number of fatalities in over several days at Marikana, and that those included those who were killed included two members of the SAPS, also two security guards. Also, in addition to those, what would it have been, 40 other people, of whom 34 were then killed in these incidents, what I'm now going to refer to as two separate incidents on the afternoon of the 16th August. So my inclination increasingly is to talk about the incident at C1 and the incident at C2 as separate incidents. And just, you know, to note in that regard that there was a break of 15 minutes between the two incidents. Okay, and so just then, you know, just very roughly where we are with things is that the SAPS is, for instance, carrying out investigations, and I understand this brought cases to court relating to at least the 7 of the deaths that took place in that week. That people who were not struck by the ITID, and then the ITID is sort of taking responsibility for the criminal investigations, which potentially also cover the confrontation between police and minors on the 13th, but are obviously primarily focused on these kind of two connected incidents on the afternoon of the 16th, where 34 people were killed. But then also just that just the point is, and this is the focus of this presentation, is that the SAPS is also then responsible for what one would call administrative measures, and they include disciplinary matters, and they also include kind of what could be called systemic issues. Both of these are relevant to questions about, for instance, the professionalism of the SAPS. So, for instance, if an organization which isn't applying itself in an appropriate way to questions of discipline can't, in a consistent way, address the issue of professionalism. So now, what I would then argue, and it seems to be kind of quite self-evident, but that needs to recognize and take responsibility for dealing in a comprehensive manner with a range of alleged possible violations that appear to have taken place at Marikana involving police members, and then also in the police interaction with the strikers, also in dealing with notably at scene 2. There was tampering with the crime scene, and then also there was basically a problem of widespread dishonesty and lack of cooperation by the SAPS in providing evidence to the Commission of Inquiry. So now this is just a note on, you know, some of the in the report of the commission itself, there's a number of findings that point to personal criminal conduct, misconduct, and SFDS members at Marikon. And so there's a list of them there. What I've omitted, and it isn't necessarily comprehensive, but I mean, you know, for instance, at the bottom I've just said various other SFDS commands and members implicating dishonesty, but also what I've missed from this list is also that actually the commission does refer the incident on the 13th for criminal investigation, particularly I think in relation to one or two of the people who were took by SAPS officers. So the, one of the killings on the 13th was, I think, found by the commission to at face value, clearly the lawful killing. The one was much ambiguous, but then there were serious questions about the third of those cases. Okay, so then I'm going to, just in this presentation, I'm not going to go through all of the information about this, but I just wanted to talk in a bit more detail about some of these cases. And so the one thing is just specifically about Team 2. So as I said, you know, I've just noted here in relation to Team 1 that the Commission did make the finding that some police officers may have exceeded the bounds of law for private events. It didn't make a comprehensive finding against, you know, that it said that some of these officers might have reasonably believed that they were under attack. Whether or not they were actually under attack, you know, in a question which the Commission hasn't tried to answer. But it says that, but nevertheless, it says some might have exceeded the bounds of law for private events. But then specifically in relation to Scene 2, because some of the facts are that there were shooters from four SAPS units involved, including 24 NIU members, 11 sub-T members, 11 K9 members, and 11 POP unit members. All of them were involved in using live ammunition at scene 2. And so the commission finds the SAPS provided no details of what happened with regard to the deaths of most of the deceased at scene 2. And then what it also says even is that even where SAPS does provide evidence pertaining to the deaths of some of the deceased, their versions do not bear scrutiny when weighed up against the objective evidence. So then the implication is that the SAPS has not managed to demonstrate that any of the 17 strikers killed at scene 2 were killed lawfully. And so my interpretation of that is that until the contrary is proved, there's a reasonable basis for believing that all of the scene 2 killings were unlawful. And there's one case of the 17 which is arguably an exception to this point, which is the killing of Mr. Mpunza. But even here we have a situation where the evidence is that there were three shooters involved, and we only have statements from two of the shooters who were involved in the confrontation with him. And the policeman who is responsible for discharging the bullets which are likely to have killed Mr. Mpunza has not, there's no evidence as to who that was or as to what the justification was for doing so. So my impression is that it's not something, I'm arguing that it's something that still should happen, but it's actually something that should have happened. If not before then at least after the release of the commission's report. And so what should happen, as far as I understand, is that the shooters, all of the shooters, were involved in the shooting at scene 2, should be suspended on the basis of the reasonable suspicion that many of them acted unlawfully. And also their firearms should be withdrawn from, they shouldn't be, allowed in any capacity to possess firearms. And then a disciplinary process should be implemented against them, and obviously a fair and fully procedural disciplinary process which looks at the evidence and also looks at the evidence that they present in terms of its truthfulness or not, because you can't have a situation where you've got armed officers of state who are not providing a truthful account of incidents where they use their firearms. Those people, in principle, should not be employed by a police organization. Okay, so then
I'm not quite sure exactly how much time I've got, but you know, I've also made some notes here on questions.
I think about 20 minutes if you can just make the highlights.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not going to talk about this in detail, but just because Carlos is one of the police members of the SNPS, who then, if one goes through the report itself, you know, there's extensive questions raised about Carlos's conduct, and also about the truthfulness of the evidence they provided to the Marikana Commission. So, in essence, the point here is that this merits response from the SNPS in terms of what is the SNPS's response to this in terms of the standards which it expects from members of the SNPS. And so similarly, in relation to Major General Naidu, he's also one of the people who, one of these officers directly involved in, incident at Marikana on 16th of August 2012, around 2 and 4 inches. Within the mission report, there are two specific recommendations relating to investigation with a view to possible prosecution. There's also, again here, questions about, evidence which at face value seems to be dishonest evidence which he provided to, for instance, by way of a written statement to the commission. So, you know, as far as I know, Major General Naidu, for instance, has not been suspended, and no action has been taken against it relating to the incidents at Marikana. So then also, you know, this slide then also sort of just details, all of these has some bullet points relating to a range of issues alleged dishonesty by SAPS members in providing evidence to the commission. I think also this issue of Brigadier Basak-Sela was discussed by, or came up in Isaac's presentation lastly, but, you know, there, what the investigation that is being conducted against her is for neglecting to take proper care of the memory stick. And so, obviously what the suspicion, I don't think I'm the only person who suspects this, is that this is part of a pattern of systemic dishonesty on the part of the SAPS in dealing with the patient and deliberately concealing evidence. And there was so just also then to emphasize that in the report of the commission itself, this issue is not dealt with comprehensively. But for instance, if you look at the head arguments of the evidence leaders now, the commission is a structure appointed by the president, and the evidence leaders are lawyers appointed, paid for by the state to assist the commission. And so the head of argument of the evidence leaders set out in much more detail than does the commission's report itself, evidence relating to dishonesty by the SAPS in relation to its representation to the commission. And so, I would then argue that the basic argument here is then that it seems the obligation on the part of the SAPS is not only to consult the report of the commission, but other evidence which or information which may be relevant to the issue. And so, for instance, potential heads of arguments of the evidence leaders, but also other heads of arguments and other evidence submitted to the commission would also be relevant to this issue. And so also just obviously the point is that, the issue of disciplinary measures isn't dependent, shouldn't be seen as dependent on findings by the IPID. The IPID's mandate is primarily in relation to criminal investigations. And disciplinary findings rely on a lower evidentiary threshold, as a probability, rather than beyond reasonable doubt.
And so even in the absence of there being ground for prosecution of SAPS members, there may be extensive grounds for disciplinary measures against members of the SAPS. And also, of course, just the point is that in the absence of punitive measures, there should also be corrective discipline. And so there's a need, if we're talking about the professionalism of the SAPS, then there's a need for the SAPS to respond comprehensively to the Marie Carmen issue and not